Hello all, and thank you for joining us today. I'm Lisa Chamet, and I'm your host for today's podcast. The cost of living crisis poses a dual threat to charities. Funds are rapidly decreasing, whilst service user demand is rapidly increasing. And that dual threat is compounded by loads of additional challenges. It seems that 2023 will prove another tough year for the sector. In today's podcast, we want to help you face the many challenges of 2023. We want to help you recognize the core ones, understand the potential impact, and confront them head on. And that means talking about financial sustainability, ever-increasing energy bills, cyber threat, overhead, staff and volunteers, digital exclusion, routes to better service delivery, and so much more. And so we've called on our content writers, both of whom regularly write about the cost of living crisis, to discuss the main challenges stemming from the crisis and some of the solutions. So welcome, Laura.
Hello.
Hi, Laura. And hi, Johan.
Hello.
Hope you're very
well. That's my impression of Laura.
Welcome to all of you listening to us, and hope you find loads of helpful tips and reassurance listening to us today. Without further ado, let's get started. Can you, maybe one of you, start by giving us the main challenges caused by the cost of living crisis? Because we see loads of headlines, but it'd be great to have a bit of a...
It's quite bleak out there at the moment, especially with, you know, recent talk about the council tax going up and just everything. It just feels like the rising cost of everything is pretty relentless. It's almost like the cost of living has gone up. So, yeah, I think people are just finding it a lot tougher on the amount of money that they have. There was reports as well that wages have gone up. They're at the most they have in 20 years, but with inflation, that's a pay cut still. In the charity sector, it's particularly hard. So there's research that's shown that charity workers are paid 7% less per hour than other workers. And private sector wages, which grew 7.2% annually, have, you know, that's more than double what public sector workers are. The wages there. So yeah, I think even professionals who've had their yearly pay rises are finding that pay getting eaten up a lot more. There's also research that shows that one in five people refer to the Trussell Trust food banks are from working households. You know, there's a 45% increase in people using food banks for the first time between April and September last year. I think food banks are a really sort of, they're a bit of a canary in the coal mine when it comes to the cost of living. And especially when, you know, one in five people who are working, that's really difficult. Like, people should be able to afford to live based on their wages.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that's true. And I think the important element is all that translates to the sector as a whole. So a lot of the facts that Laura said is, of course, that's where your increases in service delivery demand go up. If one in five working people are, not one in five working people are using food banks, but one in five people using food banks are working people or in work, then of course service demand, that's a charity that's seeing an increase in service demand directly related to the cost of living crisis. So you are, and then so charities have to react to that. And what happens is the Trussell Trust is an example, is actually going to get sort of less fundraising. They're going to have less funds to work with. They're going to have more people to feed and more people to support. That's the crux of what Lisa mentioned in the introduction, which is the dual challenge.
And
I guess today's podcast, I think we dive into what those challenges mean broadly for people, and ways that charities can actually try. It's not like tips or hacks, because these things don't exist in this scenario. I mean, of course, there's things you can do, but it's mainly sensible solutions and sensible ways that you should approach that. So for me, I think the big one is, I mean, those dual challenges, but it's about the solutions to them. And I think financial sustainability is the obvious one. So we're talking about reducing your costs and raising your funds. Those are direct solutions to what we've mentioned. Rising demands needs more money, and you know, you need to cut back on spending. Energy bills, Laura mentioned that. I think that's a very important one, which we all hear about constantly. It's interesting, a lot of the disputes now, the papers, for people who like British history, if you read the papers now, they have such a similar like headlines to the 1970s. And when you look at the 1970s headlines, it was all about energy, all about it. It's funny when you're 52 years on and you're reading the same things. But the solutions then weren't too different today. It's cutting back on energy. in sensible ways. No one, I don't think it's that you should turn the lights off when you're in the room, because it can be very difficult to see. but it's about stuff like turning everything off when you leave. And this is an office. You know, we do these things at home because they are personal bills. But you work for a charity, you likely care about that charity and you want it to be financially stable, so cut back in those ways. And increasing funds, which I'm sure we'll get onto in later in the podcast, but that's a big one. Just finding new ways to do that, new ways, and being inventive and creative and depending on digital in those for those elements. And finally, I'd just like to mention the neglected challenges, which I think are going to be super important. So stuff like cybersecurity becomes an afterthought.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. And unfortunately,
the thing is, that will definitely cost you more if it becomes an afterthought. Preventative measures are half the price, if not more, than reactive measures. Threat levels are particularly high because one thing cyber criminals like is vulnerability, and they know you're going to treat it as an afterthought because that's how they work. They work on your vulnerability. And sustainability, we're launching a huge climate action campaign because we want the charity sector to be more cognizant of climate action and meaningful climate action. And I think you need to include that too. That shouldn't be something you forget. I mean, ultimately, because, well, you live on this planet and you need to protect that planet, so you shouldn't forget it. But it doesn't have to cost you a huge amount of money. In fact, you can save costs while doing it, which I'm sure we'll get on to. Stuff like, for example, recycled tech. It's more environmentally friendly and it will save you money on the new tech you buy. Mm-hmm. So the challenges are many, I think, is the point. And the key, and I hope we get onto this in a bit more detail, and I've got some thoughts on it, I think the key is to really find the best possible solutions within what you have and your capacity and work that out, really.
Yeah, I think it's not getting duped by a false economy, right? So it's, as you said, it's really easy to be like, oh, but this I've got to concentrate all my funds only on service delivery, only on this. But you're not going to get volunteers, and if you don't invest in volunteers or like volunteer making a volunteer space that's very rewarding or very positive, and if you don't invest in digital inclusion with your services, you can't use the stuff that would save you money there either. And if you get a cyber attack, you're in a lot of trouble. You could get fined by the Information Commissioner's Office. Just generally, people lose trust in you, so they're not going to fundraise with you. So yeah, don't think that exactly just what you said. Don't think you're saving money because you're not in the end.
The other thing is fundraising as well. People tend to invest and go, and as I said, you do need to raise funds. But the idea isn't to take away from other things, like having a sustainable finance system, having a sustainable pool of employees. If you forget your employees and just channel everything into fundraising and take it away from day-to-day operations and sort of drag things in this way, then you're not going to be able to raise funds at all, because you face more existential problems, you know? So it's all about it's about approaching it with sensible choices rather than actually going, all right, look, we're struggling now. We need to raise funds so we can help our communities. You won't be able to help your communities if you're that
long-term.
Yes,
unfortunately, it might feel to some organizations, especially the small and medium-sized one, that there's a lot of firefighting taking place. If you're listening to this in the February-March period, it's actually a good time to maybe take a step back and start budgeting for next financial year and look at, you know, what's going on. And there's been a lot of innovation during the pandemic that could be, you know, that could be... rethought and reshaped into the more current challenges. So we're going to get to it in a minute, but
Can I just add, I think that's a really good point though, Lisa. Like everything that we're saying in here is attainable. Like we've been through one crisis. I know it feels a little bit like we're going from one to another, but like the charity sector is really creative and it is really good at finding solutions.
Absolutely.
And we've seen with like sustainability that if you talk in a really fatalistic way, then you're not less likely to be able to address it. So actually everything is attainable and the charity sector will be fine. So that's good.
Absolutely. And yes, there are many organizations listening to us that are used to seeing reductions in funds and, you know, through other periods or events. So this is a way perhaps to feel a little bit more outside the box and seeing what could happen and what we can ideate. So we're here to help anyway. Charity Digital.
We hope.
And actually, you know, I don't know, Johan, if you want to go on, but what are some advices on how charities can overcome some of these challenges that we've described?
Yeah, I mean, our website is essentially increasingly geared towards these sorts of challenges. Mm. It's about, we aim to help, you know, charities of all shapes and sizes, but a lot of our advice is basically to take proactive steps and not worry too much about the formulaic side of things, the bureaucracy, the admin, just start doing things. So if we start with budgeting, because I think it's probably it's the sensible place to start, at least to have a sensible, realistic budget for the next financial year is an immediate thing that charities should be thinking about now, really, in preparation for April. But the first thing is, Lisa alluded to it briefly and Laura echoed it, and that's that we already had these questions of overheads, for example, during the pandemic, when you looked at your tech and rental properties, utilities. But the big one was rental. I mean, hybrid is now an option. We know that. You can reduce your office space. That's a realistic choice in a cost of living crisis that will help basically reduce your expenditure, as simple as that. Then the stuff like your employees, I would suggest you need to look after your employees. That's definite. And as Laura mentioned earlier, a lot of people are struggling. A lot of your employees will be struggling, particularly people with families and people who don't have a ton of money. And you need to make sure you're supporting them. That's the first thing. But that also means that maybe you don't go out and hire loads of new people. That's a choice. But the opposite is that maybe you do. If you think you can grow in the right direction, you need to make the sensible decision and you also need to project. So like think, what is that going to bring you and how are you going to look in 4, 6, 8 months time? Maybe you have reserves you can rely on that allow you to take these choices and grow your way out of a crisis. Or maybe you need to rebalance and think. The latter for me is always the sensible option, but I am not, I'm not a finance person. The second is energy bills. Obviously we want to cut those back. That's utilities too. And to be honest, not just energy, all utilities. In terms of energy, which is the big one we talk about, conduct an energy audit immediately. You can do that. It doesn't take that long. You can do it in an afternoon. And then there's stuff like getting a smart meter can save a lot of money and install a programmable thermostat. Change your suppliers, check your rates, because that's one thing everyone's just realized. It's weird because I don't think when energy wasn't costing as much, everyone was like, oh, it's fine. We don't pay that much. Now everyone's like, wait 1 second, I can get stuff cheaper. And that's a good thing. I mean, they should be held to account and people, they're not acting particularly well, to put it very mildly.
Yeah.
If I was on a personal podcast, I might say something a bit more thorough.
And on that, actually, Johan, that something sprang to mind. I've heard of many charities whose staff actually come more often in the office because they can make the most of the heating at the office as opposed to having to heat their home. And actually that could be an opportunity from an organization perspective to focus more on these office days where you know that you're going to have more people in, maybe a couple of times a week. And that will be a relief for some of the employees, because obviously it means to them that they don't have to spend too much on heating. And to your organization, it could mean that you have more productive in-person days, maybe once a week or twice a week. And you could put that from a more sustainable perspective in your strategy, in your hybrid strategy going forward.
Yeah, definitely. And stuff like that is where the creativity comes in, I think. You know, like think about address ways you can... It's weird, like collaborate with your employees, make sure you're looking after them and make sure they're looking after you. And it's a joint effort. Other things with in terms of finance is full cost recovery. So when you're doing your projections, factor in inflation and look at the economy or economic output and economic projections, but then factor in full cost recovery so that you're actually factoring in every element of your time spent. So employee time, expenses, impact reporting, recruitment costs. Recruitment costs isn't what you pay a recruiter. It's the time every individual is spending in that meeting. So full cost recovery is a really good way of any charity, even if it's one of you, just remember that like it's not just what goes in and what goes out, it's what you put in too. So for example, this podcast has 3 employees spending say an hour and maybe some other bits of research. That would be, you should factor that in. It's not the cost of the electricity, it's everything. So always be quite thorough in that sense. And then the final thing I'll mention before we go on some neglected challenges and what we can do there is just income diversification. Again, it's related to finance. This is a big one that charities can really proactively change the way that they their financial trajectories, essentially. So assess your income streams, firstly. So look at the way your incomes come in. That could be through funds, it could be through fundraising, it could be through grants, it could be through merchandise sales, whatever, advertisement, whatever you do. And then look at the risk of each stream. So for example, fundraising is currently at risk, often, not for everyone. Some fundraising streams are doing quite well, mm-hmm. but fundraising is typically, because of the cost of living crisis, under some amount of risk. Try to ascertain a realistic number of the risk, and then look at how much of your income is dependent on that stream. So for example, if you've got 75% of your income is through fundraising and it's a massive risk, you have a serious problem. If it's 15% and it's not a big risk, you're probably okay. And in that situation, you can continue as normal. You do not have to panic or anything like that. You are actually financially viable. But assess the income stream, each one, and think about its risk. And if you realize that you need to develop and diversify your income stream, take steps to do that. One of the biggest, so you could do CSR, for example, more partnerships. You could sell merchandise, sell bags with your names on it. Not names, your charity name on it. Laura.
Your one.
I buy that. Yeah.
But the last thing I'd say is just, and then diversify your fundraising stream. So if, for example, you're not doing if you're not doing particularly well in one form of fundraising, let's say Tin Rattle, just for old time's sake, you know, it, then go maybe look at Gaming for Good, or look at one of the cool new alternatives and digital fundraising ideas that could actually give you new revenue.
Look at funders as well. But I think what's really interesting is that charity funding from the government is at its lowest for 15 years, according to the NCVO. So for the first time in 20 years, most voluntary sector income comes from public giving. So I think that we can make an argument now. I think we need to start maybe lobbying a little bit if we can, and talking about where charities provide value. And there is the Charity Excellence Framework has a really good list of reasons that you can provide to like the government when they're making their budget in March, right? If we make our voices heard, it might be a little bit late for that. But either way, I think these are some really good arguments that we should like follow and think about. Yeah. So, you know, charities are far more able to reach the most vulnerable and excluded. And so our support is better targeting than blanket, you know, things that the government are trying, maybe. And then with 1 million staff and an estimated 13 million unpaid volunteers, we are cheaper than the public sector. And also, if we don't get funded, the cost won't go away. It'll just transfer to an overstretched public sector. So again, a false economy. And also, responding to those needs would be very popular among the electorate, wouldn't it? People really need help. Help them. So I think that, you know, that's a pretty obvious example. Like,
I think
reason
it's a
to
good
help.
One, though. I mean, we don't talk about we tend to not talk about that enough. It's almost like there's a, and we talked about being a bit fatalistic in a sense, but we are like, oh, well, the government's not gonna, you know, they're cutting again, and we all kind of accept that. You as a sector, you know, tell them you don't like it.
Yeah,
you know,
like,
absolutely. I mean,
prove our value.
It's an independent choice. It doesn't really, this is an opinion of mine, but I should probably caveat that. But what I mean is, if you don't like this particular government's actions, one particular government action, then you're okay to say that, even if you are committed to sort of political impartiality or independence.
You can still
dislike the fact that, for example, they're cutting a very meaningful thing within the charity sector or other legislation for that matter, you know, whatever it is.
Or having a different, you know, different, I think it's Secretary of State, you know, the sixth one in a few months. So there's a lot of change happening there. Mm. And from a charity perspective, it means there's no stability from what, you know, the government can dedicate in terms of time and resources.
Yeah.
So those are things that do not require you to be, you know, you don't need to feel like you have to be neutral, but you can just present the cold hard facts that the sector needs help, and that at this moment in time, you know, there needs to be some support coming from everywhere.
And
I was thinking also that many charities may want to reconsider. Obviously, there's been the news of Amazon Smile stopping, which was actually a very easy way to get funds, because you didn't have to do much. But there are alternatives when it comes to fundraising, when you can just plug in your charity and just have some, a very maybe small but recurrent flow of income and of cash coming in. There's also, and I think it's you, Laura, that alluded to volunteers. There's also the fact that there's plenty of volunteers here that have plenty of skills and digital skills. And it might be a way of, you know, getting more out there and asking what volunteers can do for your organization.
To just add to that, so two things is the volunteer and the fundraising, both of them, if you want to get creative and you're looking where to start, because you should be thinking about that at least, we're saying digital, get creative. Flexibility, flexible giving and flexible volunteering are two ways to basically, there's solutions to those problems. One, flexible giving allows people during a cost of giving crisis to still donate to their favorite charities, even though they may be struggling themselves. It's a great way for you to allow them to still have that loyalty to you and to give them agency as well and allow them to continue supporting you. It's good for you, of course, because you don't lose donors. Mm-hmm. And the beauty of flexible giving is further down the line when things are looking a bit better, then they may increase is the word I couldn't find, their donations. And flexible volunteering too, that's a creative solution because you've got all these people with these skills, all these people who want to volunteer and they're willing to do stuff like code for you. And a lot of people kind of see volunteers in this old fashioned sense of someone who comes along and moves sandbags from one place to the other. Mm-hmm. And it's not that, or someone who works in a food bank, which is a typical how we're all in a homeless shelter. Mm-hmm. But a volunteer in this day and age can be someone who works 2 hours a week writing code for you so that your website functions really well, or you have a better user interface, or you better channel people to your donation platform. So
absolutely,
it's just thinking creatively about those two elements can really boost you. And these two, I think, is definitely a great thing to bring up. That volunteering is not as you always thought of it, you know?
Mm. Yeah. There's a charity in Northern Ireland, a volunteering charity, that's done some research into volunteering during the cost of living crisis. And they were saying that one of the biggest barriers from the people they've interviewed has been the fact that there's a lot of things, a lot of competing priorities now that the sort of lockdown restrictions have ended and stuff like that. And also people are sort of emotionally quite finding things quite difficult. So if you had a flexible system where people could come in, you know, I know there needs to be a little bit of knowing where, when and everything, but if you can provide a little bit more flexibility, I think you are going to reach more people. Mm-hmm. Just, yeah, exactly what Johan said. Also, I think you could look to partner with local or even national businesses. We know that JP Morgan, for example, the bank, has an excellent Tech for Good scheme, which helps charities with their digital skills, which addresses some of the sort of problems you might have in addressing the rise in demand. But local organisations might be able to donate time, devices or skills. There's a really good initiative by the Good Things Foundation, and it's a national device bank where people donate their devices to them, and then they give them to like people who need them it basically tackles digital inclusion, digital exclusion, helps digital inclusion.
Yeah. Always a tough one.
But they have on their website, they have a way that companies can get involved. They have a way that charities can get involved. So I think look for those sort of programs and you'll find them, because I think there are quite a lot of them out there. And I think they're another way of getting people to help you in that time.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know, Johan, if you had other thoughts on
I mean, the few things left to mention is how to sort of overcome some of the neglected issues, as it were. Mm-hmm. So I'd go into that.
What are the neglected issues?
Oh, thank you for doing Lisa's job. the neglected challenges, cybersecurity, which was the one I mentioned, and sustainability. Mm-hmm. So I'd say cybersecurity is the big one because, I mean, that almost... I've just linguistically done what I said you shouldn't do, which is demote sustainability. Cybersecurity is one of the big ones. I mentioned that the threat levels are particularly high. That's again because they are preying on vulnerability, and that's what cyber criminals do. So just some little things, and there's a lot of information on our website about just how to prevent a cyber attack, how to respond in the case of a cyber attack, how to do cybersecurity audits and stuff like that. But use endpoint security. These are the headlines, I think. Use endpoint security. Not that expensive. You can get donated versions on the exchange.
I was just about to say that. Mm-hmm. I was like, cybersecurity does not have to be expensive. We have all that stuff.
Yeah, so check out the exchange. It's all there. Turn on firewalls. Employ password managers. Again, there's ways of doing that on the exchange. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do that. We are independent. You can literally just be very careful with passwords and use a few golden rules. The NCSC has really good information.
Three random words.
Is like
exactly.
Fish,
cheese.
That's my password. It's protein not heavy password. Protein heavy password. We suggest very protein heavy password.
It's beefy. Can I just add an extra tip about the NCSE though? Because they have three really helpful free tools for charities. Yeah. So they have early warning, which it uses a lot of their data that they get about cyber attacks to tell you whether you maybe have been affected. So it alerts you early, yeah, you might say. And then there's also the mail check and the web check, and they find vulnerabilities in your email configuration and on your website. And this is all completely free.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's a really good way of shoring yourself up on the
DL. I would plug Cherry Digital, but NCSE is a great place to go anyway. But they will have a lot of tools.
Guidance.
This is the National Cybersecurity Centre, in case we didn't say that.
Yes.
Yeah, and then two-factor authentication, if you can employ that, it's always helpful. We employ it for a lot of platforms we use. I can't get into, they're so effective.
Such beefy passwords.
And then the final two things I'd say is software, keep it up to date. That's a big one that I didn't know until I actually started here. And it was like, can you update your computer? And I was like, I don't know why our IT guy keeps telling me to update the computer. It's because I never personally
it's
updated
like holes
it until
in the fence.
I kind of could be bothered.
Really? Yes. Yeah, attacked.
Like, yeah. Until I was attacked. So keep your software up to date. Do your updates as soon as you possibly can, because that's a really good idea and it's great advice. And then finally, I would say just stay alert to phishing. So phishing is a big thing, and there is cost of living specific phishing.
Oh, yeah.
So they prey on vulnerability. So they're saying during this cost of living crisis, and they're basically contextualizing in that. So phishing is, of course, for people who don't know, it's when, I don't know if I can explain this in one sentence, it's when people email, text, or get in touch somehow pretending to be someone else in order to manipulate you or take your money or ransomware.
Or want you to click
to download something from their link.
Keep alert to that. And the way to do that is just, you should teach this in your organization. Even if you're one person, you should teach yourself. If there's two of you, I mean, teach each other, it might be strange. Mm. But just broadly, you should be aware.
Yeah. Know the signs, and also be unafraid to report them if you do click on a link, because it can happen. Yeah, and it's not a blame game. It genuinely just everyone. I'm pretty sure everyone's fallen.
I haven't.
You didn't patch your thing though, so you were targeted that way.
And then sustainability. Do you want to?
No, there you go.
I'll just mention it quickly. We do have the Climate Action Campaign, which I want to plug. I think I plugged it earlier. But that gives you loads of advice about how you can be sustainable as a small organization. Also, how you can talk about climate change, the way you can address your communities, the way you can provide agency, the way you can tackle digital exclusion around climate change. There's loads there. But the thing is, the main thing I'd say here is for anyone listening, just do the little things. Make sure you're doing those at the kind of a minimum. So recycle your tech is a great one. Also saves you money, as mentioned earlier. Reduce
e-waste is so bad.
Yeah.
Mm. That's when you have, like, basically the laptops are going to landfill, they release gases and it's bad.
Yeah. Anyways. And there's loads more of that.
Yeah.
Like digital waste. I mean, even just harboring data is a
form
of waste.
Oh, yeah, 100.
Reduce waste and recycle as well. Again, little small things. Turn things off, again, saves you money. And then the final thing is buying green tech, which we are going to talk about a lot next month, since we're going to have a theme of digital and tech within the climate change. And we're going to write a lot about the way, because obviously one thing I'm not sure if people would know, but tech is quite environmentally damaging, but at the same time can be environmentally efficient. It depends on the tech. It depends on what it does. And increasingly, we need a movement that takes us away from environmentally damaging technologies to environmentally protecting technologies. And that's what we're hoping to sort of champion in the next year. So be sustainable wherever you can, really.
Turning down the thermostat by just 1 degree can save 8% in heating costs.
Is that from a sponsor?
Just change my voice. We are sponsored by Excellent Tips from Laura. I would just like to add a little bit about the sort of, I don't know if it's necessarily neglected, but what we were mentioning earlier about how some of the people that are going to be really struggling are not just your beneficiaries, they're also your employees.
Yeah. Volunteers.
And volunteers, exactly. About 25% of employees say that their ability to do their job is being affected by money worries, according to the CIPD. So, you know, I think of different ways you can help them. Obviously, if you can do pay reviews, that's going to be a really great way of helping people. But if you can't, there's also, you could partner with other charities maybe to give really good money advice. I think there's a there's a lot of sort of debt related charities that help with budgeting and things like that, but they're also experiencing increased demand. So again, if you are one of those debt charities, try and support those people, because I think it's really difficult at the moment. But you can also offer maybe an income streaming service, which allows staff to get their hands on some money that they have already earned before their monthly payday. Mm-hmm. So it's basically an advance. So it can help them if they get an unexpected vet bill or car, which I think is the thing that's taking people down right now. Like, I think people are managing until they get that bill.
And in terms of morale,
exactly.
Talking about cost of living crisis, everyone's feeling the pinch of it. And then you get something like a vet
bill. Oh, 100.
Those decisions, you know, it's...
It's difficult.
Not those decisions. That's too dark. Save your cats.
No, but it's just, I know exactly what you mean. It's just an extra pressure, isn't
it? It's an extra pressure. That's all I mean.
Exactly. There's a great organization that's called Lightning Rich, and that's basically doing that. They connect people in financial hardship to the support they need. So if they need any grant to survive. There's a couple of platforms that can help do that. I was thinking, obviously, all of this advice that we've been given is also for long-term and for long-term sustainability of organizations. Do you, maybe, Johan, do you have other sort of broader pieces of advice that charities could consider long-term?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things actually, and to be honest, is something Laura said, the lobbying element of it, I think, is so important in the long term. I mean, we need to have honest conversations within the sector about, you know, the fact that we're increasingly not supported by the government. I think that's an important thing to say long term. We won't get too deep into that, but it's a serious, serious issue. And tonally, when we're talking about this, of course, it's quite a solemn thing, but it is a solemn thing. And you can have we're having a bit of a laugh and everything like that, but we do have to be aware that this is pretty damaging to a lot of people, and particularly for us, where a lot of us work in the charity sector for a reason that we want to help people, that we also want to enjoy our lives and everything like that, but we do want to help people. And I think that's a serious concern in the long term. This is going to impact us this year, but it will reverberate for years to come, and that's an important thing to consider. On an organizational level, I would say definitely keep updated, and this might seem like I'm doing another plug, but I just mean, not with us necessarily, but I mean, we do have a cost of living conference, which is, I mean, and the reason we're doing it is because we think it's the most pressing issue right now. It's the thing we can probably help the most with. And so that's why we decided to put this on. So check out our website and you can find tickets to that. And there's bursaries for that too, to help people if they are struggling. And finally, I would say be aware of other people too. Loads of other charities are doing great things. CAF is doing a cost of living hub. Mm-hmm.
That's a Charities Aid Foundation.
Charities Aid Foundation. Thank you, Laura. No one listening to this would know that. And the other thing is just do a broad audit of where you are and think about the initial financial sustainability, the financial sustainability side of things, because in the long term, that is what you need to be viable. And that might take some tough decisions in one form or another. And often those decisions might be actually to grow. It might not always be to cut down and everything like that. I mean, but that is, consider your finances most importantly. And
What about you, Laura?
I think look to digital solutions where they can help you with automation or like, so even when you're looking for financial data, if you have a dashboard where you can see that really quickly. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of time saving ways which will free you up to therefore dedicate to the things that will help either your beneficiaries or your employees and just making them feel a little bit less stressed about stuff. So this doesn't have to be costly and I think the Charity Digital Exchange is such a great, I mean, I'm obviously going to think this, but it's such a great resource. There's so much on there that can really help stream. I feel like if once you have it, you'll never look back. Sort of levels of software that I just think that can really make lives easier. And then I think surely at the cost of living crisis about generally making lives easier at this point. I agree with Johan about the lobbying. I think there's a lot of risk of charities having, especially smaller charities, which tend to be the local ones, I guess, going insolvent during this time. So it's good. I think we need to sort of pull together where we can, learn from each other. If we have a way of doing something, share that. I think it's really good to talk about different innovations that we're making and how we're being creative. I think that can really help people. And I think, yeah, look at those schemes that, that other charities are doing. Again, the Good Thing Foundation are doing a free mobile data bank that what nationally with the help of Virgin Media and O2 and various other phone networks. And I just think that if you can save money by, if you, for example, if you are able to do your service delivery over Zoom, but the thing that's stopping you is digital exclusion, these are ways that you can save money yourself and also point them to other charities that were hard work. So I think that's a really, I think that's what it is. It's about optimizing, isn't it? It's about what Lisa said earlier, taking a step back if you can. The audit, the time to do it is now.
Yeah.
Like the, it's, I feel like 2022 was a bit of a trial and error year, and now it's about time, like making those decisions to put those things into place.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. And also, if there's also one piece of advice that we could share is also going back to basic, like what is your mission?
Yeah.
You know, what is your organization existing for? I don't know if that's very English, but what are you meant to do? And if you are rationalizing and just thinking, okay, we need to help our beneficiaries achieve this, or we need to protect these group, then it will also help you make more radical decisions about cutting costs, about you know, asking for funding, etc. So and when it comes to communicating with your donors as well, it will also make the messaging way clearer. You can say this is my ask and this is the reason why. And obviously I understand that you're struggling, hence why, you know, we can have other ways that you can donate or give your time, give your money and your energy. So I'd say as well, if you as an organization keep on listening to beneficiaries and donors, you know, keeping on top of trends from donor and charity side, and keep on benchmarking yourself, like you were saying, Laura, and you know using peer networks to keep talking with other organizations from the sector is also very important, and that will help you be better prepared, you know, in the future and be more sustainable. So I don't know if any of you guys wanted to add anything else.
I might just echo something Lisa said, which is actually marketing. It's the one thing I forgot was marketing. You can market with the cost of living crisis very front and center. You know, include it in your comms. Tell people.
Financial data is one of the like topmost things looked at by donors. They want to know it anyway, so you may as well share it with them. And if they understand that your cause is urgent, they will rally to help you where they can.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's something you said a little bit. I think it was off that. So yeah, don't be afraid to do it.
No, they want to know it. even when things are good, they want to know. They want to know what impact you're making.
Yeah,
that's just like. I feel like I'm telling everyone something you already know, but yeah.
It is the fundamentals of
charity. Talking finance will help.
It's actually a huge mistake charities make as well. You know, they don't explain to people who have already donated what their
impact, exactly.
But if you can say to someone, your money has helped this person in a really substantial way, it makes them feel so much better about, again, we are stating quite the obvious thing, but it makes them feel so much better about their donation. If it's cold and lifeless and you send them £10 and you hear nothing else, I mean, you don't get that reward for being selfless. I know that sounds paradoxical, but nonetheless.
But I think cost of living crisis is such a challenge for charities internally, isn't it? And I think it's okay to talk about that, as Johan said. Yeah. I think we should. As Lisa said, better than you are.
Way better. But I think that's all we've got time for today. Thank you very much, Laura and Johan, for all these very insightful details and information. It's been great having you.
Thank you for having us.
Hope you've enjoyed this podcast. We're looking forward to sharing more tips with you next time. Don't forget to check out our conference on the 9th of March, which will cover the cost of living crisis and how to overcome this. And in the meantime, we hope to see you soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.